Hey, this is Robin.
This is Jackie.
And this is Amanda.
And you are listening to We Saw the Devil, a podcast dedicated to horror, true crime, and all things macabre. If you want to follow us between shows, don't forget to check us out online. You can go to our website at www.wesawthedevil.com. You can follow us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast or on Twitter at We Saw the Devil. And if you want to follow specific co-hosts' social media, you can find the links to those on our website as well. Okay, so for today's episode, we will be covering the insane case of Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell, and their missing children. So if you keep up with the news at all, or you spend any time on the internet, you've undoubtedly seen a news headline related to this case. So Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow have made pretty much like incessant headlines for their involvement in a tangled web of missing children, dead relatives, and even a doomsday cult. Like an end of times cult. Just last week, Lori Vallow missed a deadline to produce her children who haven't been seen by anyone since September. And I'm going to go ahead and call that the deadline heard around the world because last week, I believe it was on Saturday, she missed the deadline and it was pretty much the headline on every single news network. Now, everyone is shocked by this case and no one really seems to understand where the kids are or why Vallow and Daybell haven't actually been arrested and brought in for questioning. The children literally have not been seen since September and nothing seems to be happening. Vallow and Daybell are still out and about in Hawaii and doing, you know, their day to day. So this case is incredibly complicated, bizarre to say the least, and there are currently a lot of moving pieces and a lot of people involved as well. So tonight we're going to try to break down the case and kind of start from the beginning because this case is just literally batshit insane. Amanda, when was your first exposure to this case?
So oddly enough, when you sent it to me, even though I'm in the same state that half the shit went down, I don't watch the news. I mean, I've seen a couple little blurbs about it on Facebook and like saw the missing kid posters and, you know, have seen that quite a bit, but I didn't realize how convoluted everything was. So the rabbit hole is very deep on this case.
Yes. And Jackie, what about you?
I heard about on the live news. It was kind of crazy. They actually had to give an outline of the characters because it's just a cult.
Have you guys ever seen a case where they have to give you a cast of characters? Like there are just so many people involved and so many names that even just on a generic news story, they literally have to give you the outline with pictures and almost like a web.
I can't say I have.
Not like this. No, like... I mean, for two missing kids, which is horrible and sad in its own way, but then you can't even just say, oh, these kids are missing. You have to go, these kids are missing, and here's the background why it's so much more crazy than the average missing kids case. And there's so many different theories, kind of like the Alyssa Lam in a way, where, you know, you can totally go on the spectrum of cult and craziness or, you know, murder or even that they ran away. There's so many different aspects to it.
No, there are countless aspects. So with this case, it may be difficult at times for people to follow along because there are so many people involved. So we will have the full cast of characters and a timeline on our website. If you ever have a problem, you know, hard time listening to this episode, please feel free to reference wesawthedevil.com where you can, you know, kind of stay in the chronological order of happenings. But in discussing the case, I figured it would be the easiest way would to be start from the very beginning with Lori Vallow. So Lori Vallow is the central figure of all of this. Now, I'm not going to get into background, biography, you know, anything really like that. That's not really relevant to this case. But we're going to just kind of start with the relevant timeline, if that works for everyone here too.
Yes.
So if you've seen the case, Lori Vallow, by all accounts, she's blonde. She's absolutely gorgeous. She looks kind of like your upper middle class, you know, Arizona blonde woman. I mean, she's very kind of unassuming and you don't really look at her and see crazy. I mean, do you guys think she looks fairly normal?
She does. Agree. Yeah, she looks like the average, I don't know, blonde woman that you'd see. She's pretty.
Yeah, I think so. I think that you'd probably meet her doing yoga.
Yeah, like you'd see driving a Tahoe and taking her children to soccer practice.
Or she's a doctor or something.
Yeah.
Like she's your dentist.
So Lori Vallow is the central figure behind this entire madness. So she's been married 5 times. She's currently on marriage number 5, and she has 3 children. Now, the children at the in the center of this case are Tylee Ryan. She's 17 years old. And JJ Joshua Ryan. He's 7 years old. So we're going to start kind of where this all began and go through the entire timeline. So Lori Vallow, her first husband was a high school boyfriend. They married in 1992 and divorced sometime in 1994. His name is actually unknown. In 1995, 1 year after they divorced, she marries her second husband, William LaGoya, in Travis County, Texas. Now, they have 1 child named Colby and then begin divorce proceedings just 1 year later. In 2001, Lori marries Joseph Ryan. So Joseph Ryan adopts Colby, the son from the previous marriage, and they have a daughter together named Tylee. 4 years later, in 2005, Joseph files for divorce, and that's finalized. A year later, in 2006, Lori marries Charles Vallow in Las Vegas. Now, this makes Charles Vallow husband number 4. Charles and Lori adopt Charles's grandnephew, JJ, also known as Joshua. So as of 2006, we have Tylee and then an adopted child named JJ. In August of 2007, enter Alex Cox. Alex Cox is Lori Vallow's biological brother. Now, he's arrested in Austin, Texas for aggravated assault in the second degree against Lori Vallow's third husband, Joseph Ryan. Alex had used a stun gun against Ryan and threatened to kill him. And Ryan had just finished a supervised visit with his 4-year-old daughter, Tylee. And Ryan injured his back and sprained his wrist in a fall. Now, Alex Cox spent 90 days in jail for this assault, which is relevant information as we continue. Now, fast forwarding all the way to 2014, Charles and Lori moved to the Hawaiian island of Kauai with JJ and Tylee. Okay, so in April of 2018, Lori Vallow's third husband, Joseph Ryan, is found dead. The autopsy lists heart attack as the manner of death. Now, another character is Chad Daybell, whom Lori is currently married to, and we'll have more on him later. But in December of 2018, Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow do their first podcast together called Time to Warrior Up. This is a far-right religious kind of doomsday prepper podcast, and Lori had apparently become obsessed with Chad Daybell and his kind of doomsday prepper group. In January of 2019, Lori Vallow and Charles Vallow are having severe problems. So Lori Vallow moves out of the family home and takes Tylee Ryan with her, leaving JJ with Charles. And this is where shit just starts to get really, really, really weird. So in January of this last year, 2019, Lori and Charles are still married. They're living separately, but still married. They're supposedly trying to work on their marriage. Lori Vallow allegedly transfers $10,000 from Charles Vallow's business account into their own personal checking account before moving money into an unknown account. So Lori Vallow is actually stealing money from her, you know, husband, who she's now separated from, and moves it into kind of like an off-the-grid checking account. She then, the next day, transfers an additional $25,000 from Charles Vallow's business account to her joint account, and then from the joint account to another unknown checking account. So as of right now, in 2 days, she transfers $35,000 away from her, you know, separated husband's business account into their joint account and then off to one that he wasn't even aware of. So already she's, you know, as you can see, she's starting to bleed his business account dry. Also on that same day, she tells Charles Vallow, she tells her husband, she was a god assigned to, quote, carry out the work of the 144,000 at Christ's second coming in July of 2020. She told her ex-husband that if he got in the way of her mission, that she would kill him.
And this is where they should have just put her down.
This is where they literally should just have put her down.
It's broken. Goodbye.
it is broken.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the very next day after she, you know, tells her what would you call him? Not separated, her...
Estranged husband?
Estranged, yes, thank you. The day after telling her estranged husband that she's a god, she tells him, she calls him and tells him that she's going to kill him as soon as he returns from his business trip, and says that an angel waiting to help dispose, that there's an angel waiting to help dispose of his body.
Because that's sane.
And she also threatened to destroy him financially.
That's also sane.
Yes. So Charles Valeau, obviously fearing for his life and is kind of like, what the fuck is going on, contacts the Gilbert, Arizona Police Department in regards to a harassment call. So police say that Lori would be allowed to go to the facility to talk to staff, and if not, she would be taken involuntarily. So there's kind of a scuffle. Charles has her purse, and it's this absolute big mess. But the police and the document states that they found Lori to be in a normal state of mind and only slightly upset. She showed no signs of mental distress as she described what was going on, and she actually seemed to be in a good mood.
She just took $35,000 of his money and she wanted her purse back.
Yes.
She could have just bought a new one at that point. Like, move on, lady.
Well, and also just to add how they think she's so normal, her daughter's friend and her family also said that she was a great mom. Like, when they moved to Hawaii, she flew her daughter's best friend to Hawaii to spend time with her so that she could still have her social life. So that's kind of the mom on the outside people thought they were looking at.
Everyone thought that she was a great doting mother to both of her children. Now, JJ, also known as Joshua, one of the current missing children, also has severe autism. That's actually why she and Charles adopted JJ, is that he actually has severe autism. So, you know, Lori has Tylee and JJ, and then an older son from a previous marriage who at this point is Colby, who at this point is old enough and out, you know, on his own. Okay, so this is where things get really, you know, kind of fly by really quickly. So in February of 2019, just a couple days after all of this mess, and Charles Valeau, you know, contacts the police department, and he's like, hey, my estranged wife is literally threatening to murder me. He's on a business trip, right? So, well, he goes to the airport and finds out that Lori had canceled his flight. So Charles had to buy a $600 last minute ticket to come back to Arizona. And so I'm sure he's like fuming and pissed about that, right? Like, you know, my estranged wife just canceled my flight out of fucking nowhere. I arrive at the airport. I don't have a flight. Had to pay an ungodly amount for a last minute ticket. His plane finally arrives in Phoenix. And guess what? His truck is not there. Lori Valeau had used her spare key to literally take his truck. To add insult to injury.
Wow, that's kind of like crazy genius in an evil way, like fucking with her ex-husband.
So Charles rented a car and then went to her home, you know, where his wife and kids are, and the house was empty.
Oh,
everyone was gone.
It gets worse.
So Charles is trying to communicate with Lori, and he claims that it took her 3 days to tell him where she'd left the truck. Now, the next day, to make matters worse, Charles Valeau is threatened with legal action because he was not able to meet payroll for his employees due to the $35,000 that Lori had withdrawn from his account. So apparently, Charles owns his own business, and he owed about $22,000 in commission to a few contracted employees. And when Lori took that money out of his account, he wasn't able to actually pay them, and so was immediately threatened with lawsuits. So February 6th, the very next day, is the day that Charles Valeau realizes that Lori Valeau transferred 2,000 rent-a-car points out of their joint account. He also finds out that Lori had called JJ's school to see if he was in class. So at this moment, Charles is thinking, okay, my wife emptied the house. She took my truck. She's threatened to kill me. And then now she emptied the rent-a-car account and she's checking on the children in their school. So he thinks that she's about to leave the state and take, you know, their children with her.
Right. Rightly so.
Right. So Tuesday later, he's like, fuck this shit, I'm filing for divorce. So he files for divorce. A week later, he files a document asking for temporary custody of JJ, exclusive use of the house and vehicle, return of all the stolen money, and return of his and JJ's personal items. Several attempts were made to serve Lori, but process servers were completely unsuccessful. At this time, her car had been seen in Alex Cox's driveway. Now, Alex Cox, again, is her brother. She was living with her brother at this time.
And he gets sketchy later.
Yes, and then this is just a whole series of sketch here. From February to March, Lori just up and abandons Charles and JJ for 58 days. Apparently, she and her daughter, Tylee, pretty much just went to Hawaii, and they spent some time in Hawaii, and then they also lived with her brother, Alex, as mentioned above. But Lori and her daughter just disappear from her husband for almost two full solid months without saying a word. So can you imagine being in Charles' position of having your estranged wife keep you from meeting payroll, bringing lawsuits upon you, stealing your vehicle, canceling your flight, and then all of a sudden disappearing with your child?
What led up to their divorce?
All of this.
So just the fact that out of nowhere she decided to just take the payroll and everything,
mm-hmm.
with no provocation or anything?
She just like snapped. She got really into her weird spiritual things and started going crazy, from my understanding.
The doomsday, she started listening to a guy named Chad Daybell and his cult. I mean, that's literally what it is. I mean, it's kind of a breakoff group from the Mormon LDS church, right? Except they believe in this weird spirituality bullshit and, you know, doomsday. It's a doomsday cult is at its core what it is. And so Lori started listening to this, and she even did, you know, back in that December, a couple of months before, she went on a podcast with Chad Daybell. That's how they met, over this doomsday bullshit.
Wow.
I'm so excited for some of our guests now.
All right. So to make things even more fucking weird, right? So after all of this stuff, after everything that Lori put Charles through, in March, just a couple weeks after this mess, Charles files to dismiss the divorce proceedings. He's like, no, I want to try to work on this marriage. So March 6th, the court approves his dismissal of divorce proceedings. So he's halting the divorce.
After all that.
Mm-hmm. The next day, he withdraws his son, JJ, from school in Arizona, and then moves with JJ back to Houston, Texas. So currently, apparently that worked out for like a day. I don't know exactly. Do you guys have speculation on why? Because the court, he is like, no, I want to work on my marriage. And then he immediately takes his son and goes to Texas with him. So it sounds like he knows that she's batshit crazy and wants out of the marriage, but was either placating her or doing something to keep his child.
It could have been games.
Yeah.
To try and hold her at bay. I mean, she sounds like she's pretty evil at the core.
Right. And then splitting up the kids, though, because you can tell that they have a very good bond based off of like little videos that have been shared, and like, I don't know if they're Snapchat or Instagram or something, little videos with like filters on them, but they seem like they're very bonded too. So separating them probably didn't go over well. And especially because he is autistic, from my understanding, you want to continue a routine. I know he even had a service dog to help them.
Yeah, and then we'll get more into the service dog in a moment. Enter a new character. So Melanie Boudreau. Now, Melanie Boudreau is Lori Vallow's niece. She's married to Brandon Boudreau, right? So Melanie and Brandon are married. Melanie is Lori's niece. Now, Melanie has also gotten into this doomsday shit. Melanie has been listening to Chad Daybell and has gotten into the LDS doomsday shit as well. Brandon seems to be a pretty, you know, with it guy. She asks in June of 2019, Melanie asked Brandon for a divorce. Brandon's completely blindsided. He said, I thought I had a happy marriage. It was just really overwhelming. And he links their divorce to this doomsday cult. Now, this may sound really random, you know, bringing up, you know, Lori Vallow's niece out of nowhere. I promise you it is actually relevant. Okay, so that's June, early of June of 2019. A couple weeks later, June 20th, Lori moves into her rental home in Chandler, Arizona. So Charles Vallow is in Houston, Texas with JJ, and Lori Vallow is in Chandler, Arizona. So they are separated. The children are separated. By all accounts, they're still married, but everything is pretty much done and over with. They're living separately. So here's where shit hits the proverbial fan and where all of this stuff gets so weird. J- July 11th of 2019, Charles Vallow travels from Houston, Texas, and is basically visiting his children and his ex-wife, and he is shot and killed by Alex Cox, Lori Vallow's brother. Amanda, do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So what I did last night is I watched the police cam of when they approach, like the police get there and they're talking to Alex Cox about what happened. So he's just like chilling on the curb. I guess the body's just in the house from what I understand. It breaks up and the audio is cut here and there, I'm sure just to protect their names and maybe their information. But he's the only one there. And his story is a little odd. I feel like it breaks at times because he says, Charles is there. He's upset. He's fighting with his ex-wife or estranged wife. The kids are present during this. And I think he says Tylee gets a bat and brings it into the living room at one point. But then he also at one point says there's a bat in the living room. So who knows? And she tries to break them up. He takes the bat from her. And then I guess the mom's just like, I'm going to take the kids to school, or take JJ to school, and leaves. But for some reason takes his rental car, if I understand it correctly. So she's gone. Kids are gone now, supposedly. And then he has the bat and he, I guess, hits Alex in the head with the bat. So then Alex, instead of, you know, being like a normal person and getting away from the situation, he goes into his room that he was staying in. He's not actually living at the house. He's just there for the night, I guess, or for a little while visiting. He goes into his room and gets his gun, then goes back into the living room and shoots Charles because he comes at him with a bat again. Now, that's his story. The cop then asks something like, and then what did you do next? And he says that he went to put his gun away and to clean his head, which I'm sorry, if he's cleaning his head, which means there's blood, which means you have a head injury. He's speaking very calm and collected on this curb, not like he has a big head injury from a bat. And then also the police, at no point, at least of this video, there could be more, obviously, more footage. But they don't say, do you need medical help? Like, let's see this wound. Not at all. They don't even, you know, react to it. And I feel like if you got hit in the head with a bat, someone would be reacting to that. But anyways, so he goes, he puts away his gun, he cleans off his head, and then he calls the ambulance. So if you just shot someone and you didn't want them to die, wouldn't you immediately, if it was self-defense, call for help instead of going and like washing your head, put away your gun? For all we know, he like sat there and cleaned his gun. Like, I don't know. So the video is on YouTube, the Chandler police cam, and he's just so calm and collected. And for just killing a family member that he says he had a good relationship with in the past, no one's going to be that calm. Now, during this video, she returns with Tylee, and it's all blurred out. I don't know why they blur their faces. Everyone knows what everyone looks like. But she returns, and they're just like standing on the other side of the street waiting. And I feel like if you came up to your house and you saw a bunch of police officers and fire department and all of that, wouldn't you be running and, like, I don't know, acting more crazy in a sense, like, oh my gosh, what happened? Is everyone okay? Who's dead? You know, whatever. She's just standing there, and so is Tylee. So I feel like they knew what had happened already, because it's not the initial reaction of one of your family members is dead or seriously injured. It's, we already know. So I feel like what happened is they were there when it went down. I don't know who shot the gun, but I feel like they were present. They already knew, and then they probably took JJ away because he can't keep a secret. That's just my guess.
That's possible. Yeah. In terms of this particular altercation, the police now believe that Lori and Tylee were present, that Lori was actually in the home, but not an eyewitness, and that Tylee possibly witnessed the killing.
That's what I'm thinking, and that also might be why she did something to them, because they probably know what happened, or at least Tylee does, And she's old enough to understand what happened and old enough to, you know, be a witness on the stand.
Now, also, no idea what happened there. Now, Charles, you know, who was living in Houston at this time, was actually scheduled to look at apartments in the Chandler area because he was planning to move back to Arizona to be with his children. So that's apparently why he was even visiting Arizona to begin with. Lori and especially Alex tried to make it sound like in the cop video, well, I don't know, you know, he just came to visit his children. No idea why he's here. But Charles had actually scheduled to look at apartments. He was planning on moving back to Arizona to be with his children and kind of reunite his family together, right? So it's just Alex changed his story. But it's actually really interesting. We'll put the video up on the website so you can watch it. But yeah, Alex Cox, cool as a cucumber after murdering a longtime family member. It's actually very odd.
That's really weird.
Yeah, right. And then someone, if you look, I looked through the comments a little bit of the YouTube video. Some people are also speculating that there is water that is on the curb that looks fairly fresh because in Arizona, it's obviously very dry. And they're saying that, like, either they washed something off or something evidence-wise was probably washed away. But again, those are just YouTube comments. But I was looking for it, and it does look like it's only in front of their house. But also, if their, you know, lawn got watered or something, it would look the same way. But that's just some speculation I've been seeing online as well.
Mm-hmm. It could have been an off-sprinkler.
Of course. But a lot of people are like, they washed something. They did something. They got rid of her, you know, leaving. I don't know. But that's another discussion.
The police have been very tight-lipped about some aspects of this case. So I wonder if someone possibly got her car leaving, you know, at any point, like a Ring doorbell or security footage, you know, in the neighborhood, because they lived in a suburban neighborhood, right? So like the houses are very close together, like, you know, 10 feet apart. And it's very, 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 very like suburban where they lived. So yeah, but apparently this we'll talk more about the outcome of this, but yeah, so Alex, as it stands, is taken away and is questioned by police. So the next day, Charles Vallow, everyone in this entire story has been married 30 times, right? Like, there are stepchildren a mile long, and everyone's been married multiple times, and so on and so forth. So Lori Vallow is Charles Vallow's second wife, right? So Charles Vallow himself was married before Lori, and he has two grown sons and an ex-wife. So the next day, Lori Vallow texts her stepsons about 4:30 in the afternoon, 20 hours after Charles was shot, to tell them that their father was dead. She doesn't even tell them how he died. And when one of the sons asked, like, what happened? She said, we are still waiting for the medical examiner report.
Yeah, because being shot needs, I don't know. That's crazy.
So the son asks her a series of questions via text, trying to find out what happens. She does not reply. 7 o'clock at night, he asks again, no reply. 8:30 that night, he texts again, and she replies and says, we're still waiting on the medical examiner. She, at this point, has not told them that they have been shot. So Cheryl Wheeler, Charles Vallow's ex-wife, and, you know, the mother of the other two kids, finds out from the medical examiner's website, the fucking website, that Charles's death had been classified a homicide. So Lori Vallow isn't even communicating with his children or ex-wife. So the, you know, ex-wife, Cheryl, has to find out literally from the medical examiner's website how her ex-husband died. So she then uses Google searches at that point. You know, this is the day after news trucks and whatnot have started reporting local news. And so she literally finds out about all of this via Google and the news.
That's so sad. That's absolutely ridiculous. And then that's also a cover up there, because if you had no part in it, you'd be like, shit went down. I was taking the kids to school. This is what I know. But no, she's being very secretive and creepy.
Yeah, she's being very, very creepy. So also this the next day, right? This is July 12th of 2019. So Cheryl Wheeler just found out that it was classified a homicide. And Lori finally sends a text message to Charles's oldest son and says, I'm still working on a wait. I'm still waiting, working on arrangements and sorting things out the best I can. So 2 days have now passed and she still refuses to tell his family what happened. The next day on the 14th, she leaves a message for one of his sons and says, inviting him to talk to her. On the 15th now we're reaching 4 days after his murder, his death. One of Charles's adult sons texts Lori Vallow again saying, hey, bitch, it's been 3 days and we still have no fucking answers about our dad. What is going on? And the text message actually read, the only information we have is that one text from you saying he passed away. You disappeared after that. We need any information you have. What happened? When did it happen? How did it happen? Where is he now? Are there any funeral plans? He later asks why Colby and Tylee haven't contacted them at all and why Colby didn't answer his call. He ends the text with, this isn't a nonchalant topic you can just throw a text at and be done with. So Lori is acting massively shady. Any comments from you guys up until the point where Charles has died?
No, but I do have some stuff coming up in the next couple days about an odd thing with the service dog.
Yes. So let's move on to August. And that is actually the next thing with the service dog. So JJ Vallow, autistic child that Lori and Charles had adopted. They had a service dog for JJ. They used a local, service organization and got, was it a Labradoodle?
So they went through a Gilbert dog trainer and got a Golden Doodle puppy back in December of 2017. Yeah, they're super cute. Same with Bailey. And basically, the goal was JJ would wander off and get distracted, and the doodle was there to help keep him calm, help him sleep, help him stay in bed, and help him with his anxiety, which I guess once trained, it was one of the first nights that JJ actually slept in his bed all night long. So very helpful family member to have as far as, a service dog. It definitely helped him.
It's true. And Lori and Charles had spent $7,000 on this dog. Absolutely worth it to get this dog for JJ. So magically on August 9th, now we're almost a month after Charles's death, right? JJ has his service dog. Lori Vallow puts the service dog up for sale.
Right. And I actually have something extra on that. So Arizona ABC 15 had an article posted on the 10th of this month, so February 10th. And the dog trainer, it's Neil Mestes, if I'm saying it wrong, I'm so sorry. But he owns the dog training elite in Gilbert, and he's the one that helped train the dog. Well, in August, she contacted him and said, hey, I need you to come get the dog. And he was super confused because, it was performing its task. It was helping JJ. She calls him and says, we need to get Bailey a new home. She said her husband passed away and they were moving to Idaho. And he just thought it was super strange that they're getting rid of it. So I guess he actually did go to the house. So he goes to the Gilbert home to pick up Bailey. So I don't know what he did with Bailey after that. But here's what he says. He said when he got to the house, JJ was in the backseat of the SUV with his tablet. She, otherwise Lori, was loading bags in the car. She asked me if I had found a home for Bailey, and I had said, no, I hadn't. I didn't have time to do that. She said, well, if my daughter asks, just say that you have, because she's really upset about all of this. I said, okay, but the daughter never came out, and I never saw if she was there. So in August, we know JJ was still with Lori, but he did not see Tylee. And then he found out about what happened to the husband being shot and all of that. So no idea, but at least that's a known account that JJ was still there.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple weeks later, now don't forget that Lori has another son from her second marriage named Colby, right? He's a full-grown adult. August 30th of 2019, Lori Vallow stops by the workplace of Colby Ryan, her oldest son, to tell him that she, Tylee, and JJ were moving to Idaho the next day. Colby says that he didn't ask why they were moving and didn't find out. All he knows is that Lori came to him and said, "We're moving." He did not hear from anyone really again until 3 months later, until November.
Damn, but he didn't care where they went.
Pretty much. So August 31st, Lori Vallow moves with Tylee and JJ to Rexburg, Idaho. Okay, so there we have that. Now, also to note, so remember Alex Cox, Lori's brother who killed her estranged husband? So he just moved into the same apartment complex as Melanie Boudreau, Lori's niece, who's also getting into this doomsday shit, right? So Lori's brother is now living in the same apartment complex with her niece, who's getting also into this doomsday cult. So let's move now to September, like a couple of days later. Lori and JJ and Tylee are in Idaho. Lori enrolls JJ at the Kennedy Elementary School in Rexburg. And she emails JJ's school in Chandler, Arizona, and says that she needs to withdraw him. So she didn't even withdraw him before she moved. She just moves, enrolls him in a new school, and is like, yeah, called after the fact. She told staff on the phone that she'd accepted a position in California, which is not true. That's a lie. And also that his father committed suicide.
That's kind of deep.
Yeah.
That's some fucking lies.
So, yeah. So she says that they were in California and that his dad committed suicide. Not true. They're currently in Idaho and her father was murdered by her brother. And his father was murdered by her brother.
And you would think they would have known that being a school, you know, a local school in that area. And especially with that headline up there, you would think that they would have known about the murder.
You would think. So
maybe off chance they didn't. You have to go off that, I guess.
So JJ is actively going to school at this point, right? Like he is actively going in and he has been seen in attending school at Kennedy Elementary. September.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure of that. I've read two different things saying that he never actually ended up going. And when asked, she said, "Oh, I've decided to homeschool."
See, I've read that he was seen at Kennedy Elementary between the 6th and the 23rd, apparently were the dates of his attendance. And then the 23rd is the last day he attended. And then on the 24th, she unenrolled him from school.
Got it. I did watch The Neighbor, too. There's an interview with the neighbor next door because I guess JJ and his kids were friends and they would play.
Yes. So Lori took JJ out of school. She told administrators that she would be homeschooling him. And JJ was not with her when she went to the school to unenroll him. He was not present with her. Also on that same day, right, September 24th, that's Tylee's 17th birthday. She was really active on social media, apparently. And on September 24th, that same day that she unenrolled JJ, it was Tylee's birthday, and she had no social media posts, no nothing. No one had heard from her.
And that is weird for a 17-year-old girl. Now, just since you mentioned social media, I did kind of poke around because I was honestly curious if we had any mutual friends on, like, Facebook, because they are from a city or lived in a city that I do have some friends and family that live in there too, like in that area. We don't have anyone in common though, so I couldn't see much. But her friend Vasia, I don't know if I'm saying her name right either, Vasia, she posts a ton of videos and pictures of her and the kids too. And I've noticed that her mom also changed her profile picture to the girls, so them when they, you know, would hang out. And she's pretty present on a lot of the groups that talk about the disappearance as well. And she does kind of update some personal information on there as well. So if you want to check out the case a little bit more, there's a couple Facebook groups. And they have some firsthand experience, you know, talking to the family and knew all of these players in this game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's crazy. That's good to know in the social media aspect, though. Yeah, it's really weird that a 17-year-old girl just up and disappeared on social media, especially on her birthday. That's not really, really normal. Let's see. So moving to October. So on October 1st, Lori Vallow opens a 10x10 storage unit locally, which is, if you're into true crime, you know that is never a good sign.
No.
So remember Brandon Boudreau, right? The husband of Melanie Boudreau, Lori Vallow's niece, right? So Melanie is the one getting like all batshit insane in the Doomsday Cult. So back in back in Arizona, Brandon Boudreau is shot at. All of a sudden, he's driving along and there was a Jeep which had someone in it. He didn't see it, but someone shot at him. Boudreau later identified Alex Cox, Lori Vallow's brother, as the shooter. And Alex Cox was driving Tylee, the 17-year-old girl's, car.
That's crazy.
And scary. So Brandon Boudreau, Melanie Boudreau said, I want to divorce you. He says it was blindsided. He was actually in his garage. And I believe he was getting out. And then all of a sudden he gets shot at. He looks and he saw Alex Cox, Lori Vallow's brother, the same person who killed Charles, driving Tylee's, the 17-year-old girl's, Jeep. So Tylee's Jeep had been left behind in Arizona, right? As the family supposedly moved to Idaho. So already now we have Alex Cox getting into, you know, like trying to murder what, person number three at this point.
I can't believe he's out and about at this point.
So, okay. So we've kind of gone down Lori Vallow's timeline, right? Like a good bit. So also in the story is Chad Daybell. Right. So Chad Daybell lives in Utah, is part of a LDS Mormon spinoff, kind of like Doomsday Cult. He's currently married at this point in October of 2019. He's currently married to a woman named Tammy Daybell. She is loved by everyone. She is apparently a massive saint. She works as a librarian. And so we're going to kind of switch over to their timeline now, right? So we're going to go to Chad Daybell and Tammy Daybell's timeline. And then eventually we're going to intersect with Chad and Lori. Okay. So moving on to the Daybells. So Chad and Tammy Daybell are married. They're in love, supposedly, by all accounts. And so on October 4th of 2019, so this is 2 days after Brandon Boudreau was shot at, right, back in Arizona, Tammy visits her parents in Utah. Chad Daybell claims that Tammy needs to go visit her parents in Utah. He says that he was told from God that she needs to go. Now, while she is there, she is shot at by a masked man using a paintball gun.
Why?
Which is weird, right? Like,
I want to know why are you shooting people with a paintball gun? That's rude, sir.
Yeah,
kind of stings, not gonna lie.
Yep. So the day after that, Tylee, her Venmo account shows a payment sent to Colby.
Do you know how much?
Okay, so in October, two Venmo payments were made from Tylee's account to her brother Colby. The memo for one payment on October 16, 2019 is a heart emoji, and the message for another payment from October 10th reads, "We love you."
Isn't that so bizarre? So she disappeared off of social media. Nothing has, you know, happened at this point, but yet we have two Venmo payments.
Right. And then Colby, and this is Inside Edition's article, it looks like. They said Colby Ryan previously told KSAZ-TV, his mom used Venmo to transfer money within the family. My mom is not tech savvy, so Tylee's account for Venmo was the account she used to transfer money to us. So it might not have even been Tylee. It was probably Lori.
Mm-hmm. Most likely, yes. Which is really insane. Also, just a couple days later, on October 14th, you know, Melanie Boudreau and Brandon Boudreau, Melanie, right, they live in Arizona. So Melanie texts her estranged husband, Brandon, and tells him that she plans to also move to Idaho. She said, the kids could remain with you in Arizona. You would have to arrange for daycare, and I could have the kids for schools, holidays, and summers. Or I could take the kids to Idaho, enroll them in school, and you could have the kids for school, holidays, and summers. Let me know what you'd like to do.
And that's not a text message for when you have kids. It's not, hey, everything's going to be different. Either option works for me. Sometimes I'll see the kids, sometimes I won't. That's not normal.
Yeah, like so nonchalant, like she doesn't give a shit, you know? So here we have Lori has already moved to Idaho, and then now we have her niece divorcing her husband, planning to also move to Idaho, right? So let's move to October 19th. So Chad Daybell's wife, Tammy, right? The saint, the librarian, she dies in her sleep. She's literally in, like, what, her late 40s? And she, healthy as a horse, apparently, dies in her sleep. Chad claims that she went to bed with a cough and just didn't wake up. The death was believed to be natural, and the family rejected the autopsy. Because in some states, if, you know, the cause of death is believed to be natural, or just in general, the family can just refuse an autopsy.
And that's very weird. I mean... I've read, too, like, some religious beliefs don't allow for autopsies, and that could have been it. But also, if you were healthy, like, I think she had visited her family within the last few weeks before her death. Totally healthy. I want to say she was, yeah, under 50. So, definitely was fine. And then all of a sudden, dying in your sleep, as a family member, or as a husband, or whatever, wouldn't you be like, what the hell happened? I need to know. I need to know if something was in the house. I need to know if it was a weird chemical. Like, to protect yourself on top of, you know, wondering what happened to your wife or family member. That's just insane to me. That they're just like, eh, she died in her sleep. That sucks. End of discussion.
No, it's really weird. And now, don't forget that Chad is the head of this cult, right? So Chad is kind of like the leader of this doomsday cult. Chad Daybell's organization is called Preparing a People. Now, it has a website you can go to, and it says that its goal is to, quote, help prepare the people of this earth for the second coming of Jesus Christ. Lori Vallow's extended family literally said that they felt the group was a cult and insane. Now, the founders of this group, Michael and Nancy James, deny that the group is a cult or represents a specific religion. They have removed references to Chad and Lori from their website and from everything. But yeah, it is literally a cult. It is a far right-wing prepper group. That's pretty much like the only information I have on, unless you have anything else, Amanda.
No, just that he wrote books, so a lot of people have, you know, read through these books, and they're insane.
And he had a podcast that he would be gone, and Lori, before Lori left Arizona, she was a frequent guest on it. He apparently prophesied the death of his wife, supposedly. How convenient that she ended up dead.
I say, if anyone you know, believes you're gonna die, you should probably go, man.
And then wouldn't you be even more curious, like, if you prophesized that and be like, well, how did it happen? Like, what happened to her?
Mm-hmm. Do you think he poisoned her or suffocated her or something?
We will get to that. Now, on October 22nd of 2019, Tammy Daybell is buried, right? Like, she's interred. Now, also in late October, remember Colby, the oldest son of Lori Vallow? He's been texting with Tylee this entire time, right? So he claims that in October that the demeanor behind her text changed. He started calling and FaceTiming her, but she would never answer. And apparently Tylee always had a reason for why she couldn't FaceTime, but she would text back. And Colby says that it just did not sound like her. And Colby said it was just bouncing back and it just didn't seem normal. And that in late October is when Colby, the oldest son, started piecing things together, apparently.
Right. And for a 17-year-old girl not to answer her phone, something's weird.
And also in late October, Tylee's friends back in Arizona are starting to receive text messages from her as well. Tylee has not been seen by anyone, but her phone is still texting people and family members that she knows.
And I haven't been able to find the actual text, but they say that they're not very personalized. They're very basic, so it could have been coming from anyone else. Like one, oh, there's one that says an October text reading, "Hi, miss you guys too, love ya," was sent to a concerned friend, and that's Fox News.
Which apparently is very unlike Tylee. She was very personable and talkative. So, and here's where things get weird. In November of 2019, now at this point, Lori and Chad, right? Charles is out of the picture. Tammy Daybell has been out of the picture. Chad and Lori are full on dating. Tammy has been in the ground less than a month, and Chad and Lori are already together. Now, they're together, and witnesses report that Chad Daybell and Lori claimed that Tylee had died the year before and that Lori had no children, no minor children.
Exactly. No minor children. So I don't know if he actually thought that, like if that's what she told him, or if they got rid of the children because of the shooting or what. But a year ago, no, she's in the police video months before that. So that's clearly a lie. Like, you know, there's a video of at least her that the police have that's, a real source that she was a living, breathing girl. She wasn't being puppeteered or anything like that other person thought for the video, the elevator video. Like, she was there.
Lori Vallow literally said, "No, my daughter died a year ago and I have no other children. Like, no minor children. Like, JJ doesn't exist." So moving on to November 4th, right? A couple days later, Lori and Chad marry in Hawaii. And you can see their wedding photo. They hired a fucking photographer and they're on the beach and they're playing ukulele and smiling and kissing and like all lovey-dovey on their wedding day.
That's some Sweeney Todd shit right there.
And there are no children to be found. None.
Nope. And I heard that the photographer started trying to get like the news sources and stuff to pay for the pictures. So they are around, but sometimes they're a little hard to find.
Even Sweeney Todd loved his fucking kid. Okay, like what kind of like low life are you to make meat pies out of your fucking kids?
it's crazy. I mean, they just show up in, you know, Hawaii. So November 4th, Lori and Chad get married. This is less than a year from Lori Vallow's husband dying. And then literally, was it almost a month? Less than a month, like 3 weeks after Chad Daybell's wife, Tammy, died. They get married in Hawaii. Now, they're in Hawaii. And on November 7th, a couple of days later, they meet with Jeannie Martin about renting a room from her home in Kauai, Hawaii. According to Jeannie Martin, after claiming to receive a, quote, sign from God about moving into her home, she asks about Tammy Daybell's recent death. Chad Daybell answers via text, "She helped me reconnect with Lori so quickly, and it helped my children move forward." So I don't know what you want to make of that. Or how Jeannie Martin, the person, like, how did she know about Tammy's death? Like, had news reached Hawaii already?
I mean, it must have. And then also recently, I don't know if we should say it yet, but now that all of this is going down, they actually went for her body now, Tammy's body, to do an autopsy.
They exhumed her body. Because after all this shit started going down, people are like, okay, Lori and Chad are literally leaving a sea of dead bodies behind them in one way or another. Let's exhume Tammy Daybell's body. Remember how Lori's third husband, Joseph Ryan, remember how he supposedly died of a heart attack? Lori had him cremated. Apparently, everyone says was very, very random. Supposedly died a very healthy 40-year, late 30s-year-old man died of a heart attack, and Lori immediately had him cremated. So she also did not want an autopsy on him. So we have a sea of dead bodies literally traveling in the wake of these two people. Okay, so also through November, there's a lot of drama between Melanie Boudreau and Brandon Boudreau. You know, Brandon Boudreau was like, what the fuck? I was, you know, my ex, now almost ex-wife's brother is trying to kill me. So, like, literally, what the fuck? His and Melanie's divorce is finalized. Melanie doesn't show up, and he's awarded full custody of the children. Guess where Melanie is? That's right. She moved to Idaho to be with Lori and the Doomsday People.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right? And also, guess what? Remember Alex Cox, Lori's brother? He's also now in Idaho. So on November 24th of 2019, Lori and her brother Alex visit the storage unit that Lori rents in Rexburg for the last time. They stayed for 4 minutes, and there is now CCTV footage of them removing things from the storage unit.
Oh, God.
Right. Have you seen it, and what do you think that they were carrying? Because it looked heavy.
It looked very heavy. It looked very, very large. Didn't they remove a child's bike, too?
There's a whole video that one of the, New York Post I just saw. There's a few others. And they actually have the security footage. And then they actually have footage of what was in the locker as well.
Some people on Reddit, I was reading all the different theories because it's not clear footage. Some people even said it looked like legs. Other people said that it looked like a car seat.
Yes. A back seat. Yeah, it looked like a seat. And honestly, whatever you read and then you look at it, you're like, yep, that's what it is. Yep, those are two legs in a tote, you know, box thing. So I don't know. But it is very strange that the kid stuff was in there. And it has, like, there's, like, jerseys. It has, like, JJ's name written on bags and stuff. And then also, when they disappeared, one of the neighbors said JJ's toys were still on the front porch. So all their stuff, and I'm sorry, like, a little kid, especially with autism, just routine is important. Having his stuff is important. You know, like, feeling secure is important. So, like, I don't know what happened to him, but I feel like if he was alive, they would be trying to keep him as calm as possible. And then Tylee not having her phone and not talking to her best friend where, I mean, looking at Facebook and the videos of them together, like, that is her person. Like, they are together all the time, or at least talking, or I don't know. And she has no idea where she is. That's weird.
So now the children have been gone for, like, have not been seen for over 2 months, right? Charles Vallow's sister was very, very close to the kids. So Larry and Kay Woodcock, now they're JJ's biological grandparents, and Kay is Charles Vallow's sister. They have since offered a $20,000 reward for information leading to the discovery of the children. And from everything that I've read and everything that I can tell, they're pretty much the only advocates these poor fucking children have.
That's sad. Their grandparents met them.
That, and I think the older brother now, like, knowing that something is going wrong.
The kids have now been gone for almost over two full months, right? So the Woodcocks, Charles Vallow's sister and her husband, are like, where the fuck are these kids? So they contact law enforcement. And on November 26th, law enforcement performs a welfare check on JJ Vallow at their Rexburg, Idaho address. Lori Vallow answers the door and tells police that JJ is staying with a family friend in Arizona. Later that day, investigators obviously call Arizona and have people check out in Arizona. That is not the case. That was a lie. Literally no one has seen JJ in 2 months.
Yeah. I don't understand why even there, like, then, why didn't they arrest her? You're their mother. You have possession of these kids and they are nowhere to be found.
Well, the very next day, law enforcement executes a search warrant and discovers that Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell had actually moved out of the townhouse that Vallow was renting. Witnesses say the kids were not with them. Law enforcement also searched the townhouses belonging to Alex Cox and Melanie Boudreau, who only lived a few doors down. So, Melanie Boudreau, the niece, Lori's brother Alex, they both moved to Idaho, and they all lived within just a couple doors of each other.
Well, and that's not normal in itself. You don't want to live that close to your family.
No. And so, yeah. So, still no sign of the children. However, law enforcement has been, you know, they did get a search warrant. A judge did approve a search warrant to search these houses, right? So they are now on law enforcement's radar at the very least, right? Like the kids now, it has been put into law enforcement's hands. People are aware that Lori and Chad are shady as shit, and the kids, people are trying to find these children now. So also on November 27th, detectives go to the house of Colby Ryan to inquire about Tylee and JJ. And there's actually a video of that. Now, Colby seems to be an amazing person. He, you know, he's much older, so he's kind of been separated from Lori and, you know, her last couple husbands, and he seems to have his shit together. He says that he immediately called his mother after the detectives left and said, "Two detectives just came to my door. What is going on?" Lori allegedly answered, "I got it. I'll take care of you. I'll take care of it. Love you." She also asked what the detectives asked him. So Lori literally wouldn't even tell her own son where the other kids, where the kids were, which is just like insane.
Did he lie and say that he was like taking care of JJ?
Colby?
Yeah.
No, Colby has had no idea what has been going on at all until just on November 27th when detectives showed up.
Did they cross verify though that JJ actually stayed at the friend's house?
Yes, and he had not.
Okay.
So Lori told detectives when they came to her door, "Oh, well, JJ's back in Arizona at a friend's house. Don't worry about it." And then they checked on that and nobody had seen JJ. He was, in fact, not at that friend's house. So then detectives searched Melanie Boudreau and her brother Alex Cox's, and Lori's brother Alex Cox's home. No sign of the children. So then detectives came to the house of Colby Ryan, Lori Vallow's oldest son, right? Like the old adult son, to ask about Tylee and JJ. And he has no idea, like none. So the kids are still not found. And Colby is now kind of like brought into it, like, holy shit, what's going on? He inquired with his mother and she's like, "I got it. I'll take care of it. Love you." So now he's majorly sketched out. And the cool part about Colby is that was, I believe, the like one of the last times that his mother spoke to him. And so he has a YouTube channel where he's constantly putting out videos trying to get his mother's attention.
Here's what I don't understand, right? Is that usually, like, was it a gated in storage unit?
I don't know, Amanda.
They do record keeping of who comes in and out. You have to like check in if it's gated in. And a lot of the times they're pretty secure, the storage areas, and they have like cameras and stuff because that's money for them.
Yeah, true.
So,
yeah, they have cameras and they are like very much cooperating with police and they're very open, I guess. Right now, the storage locker, I think her card was declined. So technically, it is abandoned.
So if there were other areas around, because a lot of traffic lights and stuff have cameras, and sort of convenience stores and stuff like that. I mean, hopefully they can try and triangulate where they may have dumped the bodies if the bodies were in the storage unit, which could, it's starting to sound like that's probably where they put the babies.
Right, that was just a couple days ago, I believe, that even came out.
Yeah, it was actually just like 3 days ago where the police finally released the footage. But the footage is from November 29th of 2019. So Lori's brother, Alex. So Alex Cox, right, has been living in Idaho, right, getting to know and, you know, twitting about with these doomsday people. He goes to Las Vegas and he marries Zulima Pastines. Please correct me if I am wrong. Pastines or Pastines. They go to Las Vegas and they get married. Now, new character for the cast here. Zulima is an avid Mormon, an avid LDS member, and self-professed emotional code practitioner. On her LinkedIn profile, she actually lists cuddling as one of the services that she provides.
That's a good service, okay?
So she marries Alex Cox on November 29th of 2019. Also, remember Melanie, Lori Vallow's niece, who also moved to Idaho, who just is freshly divorced? She marries also someone in Las Vegas. Also another Mormon far-right LDS member of the church. They all travel from Idaho to Las Vegas and get married. So they're marrying into the cult. Like, they're marrying into this, like, you know, group. So now we're in December, guys. So the kids still have not been found. No one has seen these children.
I mean, while Elvis is doing more marriages.
Yeah, exactly. So Elvis is performing marriages in Las Vegas for cult members. And meanwhile, two children are still missing. So on December 6th of 2019, Chandler, Arizona Police Department serves a search warrant for all of JJ's records at Life Academy, where he attended before Lori Vallow moved him to Idaho. And does anyone know if anything really came out of that?
It sounds like they're trying to nab her for some sort of negligence.
Yeah.
How old is he at that point?
7.
Oh, so if he's not in school.
No.
And she can't prove his enrollment or homeschooling, she's going to get in deep shit.
They're trying to get something. Exactly. It seems like police are trying at this point to get some sort of reason to like arrest
intervene.
Her.
Yeah,
exactly.
And they're so that way they can get more warrants and probable cause and stuff. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Because at this point, and the if you go on any article, Reddit, like any discussion of this case, everybody's like, why the fuck hasn't she been arrested yet? You cannot arrest someone purely on suspicion. You have to have some sort of evidence to actually go off of. You can do search warrants, you can investigate, but you cannot do something until you actually have a reason to arrest someone for it.
You can search for it with probable cause, but you can't arrest with probable mm-hmm. cause unless you have.
She's not cooperating. Well, that isn't that like enough? Just not cooperating with police, not failing to, like, you lied to police. You lied to the police about where your kids are already, and then you didn't bring them when they asked you to. I feel like that's enough, like, at least to hold her.
In Idaho, right? A lawyer has said there are no signs of life, but also no signs of death. And without that, it's nearly impossible to bring the couple to extradite them back to Idaho. And so that's the problem. Chad and Lori have moved to Hawaii. And that's actually the next piece in this discussion, is that they moved from Idaho to Hawaii on or about December 10th. They move into a condo at the villas in the Prince community of Princeville, Hawaii. So they have fled the state. Now, since this investigation has been so far local to Idaho, you know, like the missing children, they were last seen supposedly in Idaho. They can't go to Hawaii and arrest them. They can't just like, you know, arrest them in Hawaii and bring them back. So not only did Lori and Chad flee the state, they fled the fucking continent. And they're living in a $1 million condominium community in Hawaii as of December.
I mean, he has all the, what, royalties from his books and stuff?
Yep.
So what day are we at now?
We're currently on December 11th. So on December 11th is the day that Tammy Daybell's remains are exhumed by the Fremont County Sheriff's Office with the assistance of the Utah Office of the Medical Examiner. An autopsy is conducted. Now, the warrant stated there is probable cause to believe that the hereinafter described property of persons presently located within the hereinafter described location is connected with the commission of public offenses, to wit, conspiracy to commit homicide first degree, which occurred on or about July 11th. So police and investigators are pretty sure at this point that Chad Daybell may have killed his wife.
Well, once the autopsy is done, I think. They're just waiting on that. I feel like it should be done by now, though. Just not released.
It's not released. I feel like the police are probably holding on to a lot of information. All right. So let's get into it. Amanda, do you want to talk about Alex? Because this is really where things take another, like, insane turn.
Yeah. So on December 12th, then Alex Cox died. So was it his wife's son, I believe, that found him unresponsive in a bathroom and called the police. And Fox 10 Phoenix on February 3rd on Facebook has the transcript of the 911 call. And basically just, he was unresponsive. They try to do, it looks like they were trying to walk them through how to do CPR. The 911 operator says, okay, is he moving at all? And his response is, he's breathing. Basically, they're trying to get him to do CPR, but he's saying he's too big. Like, too big to move and put on his back.
And he says he also had lost control of his bowels.
Yes, yes. So that's the way he found him. And then at one point, doesn't he ask? Oh, it's okay. I'm trying to find it. It's a few pages long. But I want to say, like, they ask what his name is, and he only knew his first name.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. He only knew his first name, and he didn't know they were married.
Yeah, he had no idea. So that just seemed really strange to me for this 911 call. Just, I don't know who he really is. He's just up here, passed out.
Yeah, clearly they were very close and knew each other for a very long time.
Yeah, passed out because they say, what is your emergency? And he says, I have an older male here named Alex. Like, I'm sorry, your mom's husband is not the older male here named Alex. That's just a weird way to say it. He's just passed out here on my bathroom. Again, transcript. So, and I understand it's a scary situation. It's just, you should know your mom's husband's name.
No, that's pretty much it. Currently, so he died of suspicious causes, and the police have been so tight-lipped, there is nothing released about Alex Cox's death. Nothing. So he murdered Charles Vallow. He threatened to murder Lori's, you know, husband before that. And all of a sudden, he ends up suspiciously marrying into this doomsday cult and then winds up dead himself.
What if he's cursed? What if the main leader is just cursed and he's killing everybody by accident? God.
Not even 2 weeks.
Jesus.
Not even 2 weeks. Yeah. So he married this woman on November 29th, and by December 12th, like, what, 2 weeks later, he's dead. So moving on finally to December 20th, Rexburg, Idaho Police Department officially announces an investigation into the disappearance of Tylee and JJ Vallow. So finally, now the children have been missing for 3 months, the police department finally decides to open an official investigation, and the FBI actually joins in. So the FBI are actually now involved.
It took them long enough. Like, for kids' disappearances, it has to be quick to find them alive.
Exactly. And now we're going on 3 months. The next day,
if there's no mystery report, they can't.
That's true too, huh?
You know, it's very hard. You have to file a missing children's report for them to initiate the investigation.
And their grandparents are the only ones who care.
Yeah. They're playing the system, mm-hmm. is what they're doing.
Who is coaching her on this? Because this is a lot of moving around. This is being at, you know, the right place, right time, where she gets to avoid a ton of stuff. And yeah, full on lying to the police, always in Arizona. I just feel like anyone else would have gotten caught by now.
She's been playing a lot of diverting attention and bouncing people around,
and then bouncing herself around. Like,
she's buying time.
Yeah, like, she tells the police, "Oh, he's in Arizona," and then after they go to corroborate that story, she and her husband move. You know, so she's definitely playing the system and the legalities behind it. And I feel like she has like an attorney or lawyer, like, or someone with a legal background is assisting her with this,
or she's just really fucking smart. She could be a sociopath.
Oh, she definitely is a sociopath. Actually, multiple people have called her such.
A lot of sociopaths are very intelligent.
We'll get to theories and, like, you know, what we think happened in a moment. Let's finish up because we're almost at the end of this. So the next day after that, Rexburg, Idaho Police Department announces the investigation. They actually verbally call Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell persons of interest in the disappearance. A couple of days later, Sharn Bothlick of Rigby, Andrus and Rigby, an actual, you know, legal firm, issues a statement on behalf of Lori and Chad. So they basically are pretty much claiming, we didn't do anything wrong. Leave us alone. Like, literally, they hired attorneys to pretty much say that. Now, December 27th of 2019, you know, a couple days later, Chad Daybell's friend, Julie Rowe, who is also in the LDS cult, claims that both she and Chad had a vision where angels told them that Daybell's wife, Tammy, would die. She also claims that she knows the kids are safe. She says that in her visions, I do know the kids are safe. I can see them. I can see their energy and that they're in a bright house. I can see they're in the living room where they are. I can see they're comfortable in their beds at night.
In my brain. In my head. Because they're probably not comfortable.
She, her visions told her, okay?
Jesus Christ. Yeah. What a fucking loon.
Yeah, they'll have that. Now, also, 3 days after that, right? 3 days after Julie Rowe gave her her interview, the Idaho Police Department issues a press release stating that they know that the children are not with Lori and Chad, and that they have information indicating that Lori, quote, knows either the location of the children or what has happened to them. They also say, we strongly believe that Joshua and Tylee's lives are in danger. We are aware that in the weeks after Tammy Daybell's death, Lori and Chad told witnesses that Lori's daughter had died a year before the death of her father, which is untrue. Around that same time, Chad told another witness that Lori had no minor children. So it seems like December 30th, the police department is starting to actually finally piece things together and get bits and pieces, you know, interview witnesses, and are like, holy shit, these children are in severe danger at this moment.
Seems like they're allowed to finally.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous. I mean, I understand not wanting to screw over someone's name or you know, get in trouble in that sense. But I'm sorry, there's two children that are missing. They are not in school. The family hasn't heard from them and they're not answering their phones. I feel like that should be reason enough to at least invest, you know, like take them in for questioning, hold them because they keep moving. I mean, well, aren't they in contempt from not producing the children when asked?
Well, they don't actually have a right to hold them, though.
Nope.
They have to have something on them, and they don't have anything.
The judge has not approved a warrant for contempt, and the deadline was last Saturday.
That's
so on the judge. So why?
We don't know. I mean, we only see what's being reported, okay? So we actually don't know what's happening.
So let's move up to last month, okay? So we're literally last month, January 3rd, right? The Rexburg, Idaho Police Department and the FBI finally, fucking finally, searched Chad and Tammy Daybell's former home in Salem, Idaho. Law enforcement takes 43 different items. Don't know what they are, but law enforcement went and took 43 items. Also in early January on the 7th, Larry and Kay Woodcock, JJ Vallow's grandparents, announced a $20,000 reward for any information leading to the recovery of him and Tylee. If you actually get a chance to watch the news, they have many videos. They are the only faces of family in this case, other than Colby and his YouTube channel, right? Like Lori's oldest son. Larry and Kay Woodcock, the grandparents seem like such amazing people. They're begging to take JJ in. You know, they're his biological grandparents. And they're like, Tylee, you know, you're an adult. You're more than welcome to come live with us too. We love both of you. And they are the only basis. So on January 7th, they offer a $20,000 reward leading to the recovery. Remember how, like, what's so fascinating about this case is that, you know, video footage, CCTV footage, you know, all of this shit just comes out over the last couple weeks, has just come out. But it's of things that happened like a year ago. So January 13th is the day that the body cam footage, the 911 call, and the police report from the day Charles Vallow was shot is obtained by Fox News 10. So it happened, you know, many months ago, but yet the news finally just got it. So on January 25th, right, now we're less than a month ago, just a couple weeks ago, law enforcement in Kauai, Hawaii, serves Lori Vallow with a child protection order from Madison County's prosecutors in Rexburg, Idaho. It required her to produce Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallow to Idaho Department of Health and Welfare by January 30th. So she was served. She was physically served by a process server with a child protection order requiring her to produce these children. The next day, now law enforcement in Hawaii is on their case. So the very next day, law enforcement in Hawaii sees Lori and Chad's rental car and search both the car and their home. So Nate Easton from East Idaho News actually has flown, right? So like news agencies from all over the country have now flown to Hawaii to try to track them down. Because here's what's so weird. Lori and Chad are going about their damn daily business in Hawaii. Like, people, news and journalists are following them as Lori's going to the gym. Like, she's happy and skipping with her husband and going to the gym. And they're like, where are your children? Where are your children? And they're not doing anything. So Nate Easton from the East Idaho News pursues the couple to question them about the whereabouts of the children. That has gone viral. That was one of the biggest moments, I would say, on January 26th, when Nate Easton is following and yelling after Lori and Chad. They're holding hands, walking, and they're, you know, completely just nonchalant, and they refuse to answer. Did you guys see that video?
No, I haven't seen that one. I've just seen in one of the groups, there's a picture of them holding hands at the supermarket.
I have not.
Yep. So that, I believe, is the same day that that happened. But this is the moment that really kind of went viral. It was the first, I guess, like public's kind of introduction to them together, is like all these newscasters following them, asking what happened to the kids, and them just holding hands and acting like nothing was wrong. So January 29th, Kay and Larry Woodcock file for emergency guardianship of JJ Vallow, which is so sad. Also the same day, Chad and Lori clear out the condo that they were renting in the Prince community on the island. They allegedly move into the Kauai Beach Resort. Oh my God. So they've tracked them down. They found their condo, and then they're like, nope, we got to move again. So they moved into a beach resort. So cue when this shit show really hit the fan. On January 30th, just literally less than 2 weeks ago, Lori Vallow defies the court order and does not produce the kids to the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare or Rexburg Police Department, risking civil and criminal consequences. And nothing has happened.
They're going to probably talk about how they're too far away. That's why they moved to Hawaii.
Now,
there's a reporter, Justin Lum, from Fox 10 Phoenix, and his Facebook page is just this case for the most part right now. And sorry, I sound ridiculous. I'm sick, so sorry. 6 hours ago, his team has several other requests waiting to be fulfilled, but here's his response from the Fremont County, Idaho prosecuting attorney's office. So he had sent, it looks like, or his team sent, a request for public records of the 911 call and report taken from the death of Tammy Daybell on 10/19/19 and any 911 calls from the Daybell home. And then the response is, your requests are denied. I mean, it's a little longer. Yeah, it's from the prosecuting attorney, the office of... And yeah, it goes into like all these statutes or whatever, but it just says your requests are denied. Skimming. They're exempt from disclosure if they meet one or more several conditions, and then a bunch of statute stuff. So they're trying to get those, because I wonder how that 911 call went. Wife's dead. She was sleeping. Everything's great. Just take her body. Do not look at it, though. Yeah. Oh, and then actually, yeah, he's the one that I read it. I couldn't find from before, but he said on February 10th, and again, this is Justin Lum of Fox 10 Phoenix. If you're wondering why the exclusive story we broke for the Lori Vallow Chad Daybell wedding is removed, here's why. The photographer is revoking permission and asked for compensation for the images now since the story aired. So that's why their wedding photos are being taken down. So if you can't find them, they're out there everywhere. But when an actual news station is reporting them, they're being asked for money. So they hang with some great people, because wedding photographers, once they're paid, they normally release the rights to their pictures. So that just seems weird to me. But it looks like he's just like dedicating his life right now to this story. So I'm going to go ahead and follow him and keep up, because it looks like every day, every few hours, he has some sort of update.
No, it, definitely. We can continue doing updates as well. That's crazy. All right, so January 30th, she defied the court order. Okay, so on February 2nd, now this is, or February 1st, this is really interesting. Have you guys seen the GoFundMe?
Yes.
Okay. I will. So Colby, right? Lori Vallow's oldest son. He's married, okay? His mother-in-law actually sets up a GoFundMe claiming that Colby and his wife lost their jobs and he's being stalked. And so she put up a GoFundMe for $7,500. She says, these kids have lost their cars. One was taken by the police for evidence, and the other was in Lori's and Charles' name, and the payments had not been made for months. Colby lost his job due to all of this. His credit has been ruined, and they have been hounded and stalked by reporters on a daily basis. This has been like a living nightmare that won't go away. They need help, so please find it in your heart to help in some way.
How much has been donated?
$300 of $7,500.
Oh boy.
And it was actually done by the mother-in-law. So Colby's mother-in-law. Apparently they're newlyweds. They have a 1-year-old child. Colby has been the only sole person with a job. Apparently the baby has medical needs. She says Colby's mom, Lori, has obviously ghosted them like she has the rest of the nation, and they can't even explain how bad things have gotten, to not know if his siblings are dead or hidden somewhere. So, like, this is a very, 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 like, sad GoFundMe. But the mother-in-law has put one up to try to assist with Colby, which is really interesting. The wording is very interesting, I think, in a lot of that. So that was on February 1st. So February 5th, let's see. So 6 days ago, remember Brandon Boudreaux, right? The ex-husband of Melanie, the niece. So he hired a private investigator out of his own pocket because the police were not taking him seriously when he said that Alex Cox was the shooter. So the private investigator apparently did his, you know, PI stuff and came back and said he identified Alex Cox was the shooter. He said the vehicle that was involved with the shooting belonged to Charles Vallow. It was a green Jeep Cherokee with Texas license plate. He recognized that this was his former in-law, and he suspected Charles Vallow's killer, Alex Cox, was the one driving the Jeep. So Brandon Boudreaux, you know, ex-husband of Melanie, was also, Alex Cox also did, in fact, it is now accepted that he did try to kill Brandon Boudreaux, that Alex Cox did, which is just so weird. Like, that makes no sense whatsoever. By all accounts, the marriage, you know, the divorce is going smoothly. Like, Melanie blindsided him, said, nope, I want to move to Idaho. I'm really into this new spiritual religion, you know, thing. And I want a divorce. You can keep the kids. I can take the kids. I don't give a shit. Bye. And then all of a sudden, Brandon Boudreaux is being, you know, someone attempts to murder him. So it is now accepted information as of 6 days ago that Alex Cox was the shooter. Further, so now we get, so there's been no news pretty much for the last week until yesterday, actually. So the big news and the very last piece of information, actually, is that law enforcement just found Tylee's cell phone with Lori.
Oh, shit.
So Lori has been, in fact, the one with Tylee's phone. And that's the last piece of information, Amanda. Have you seen anything in the last, like, less than 24 hours?
No, just what I had read from that Facebook post about denying the 911 call. It looks like he does have, though, a couple other calls from some of the family members and from, like, the call between Gilbert Police Department detective and Fremont County. Talking about Tammy Daybell, he does have an MP3 file for that. So I'll do some digging and learn a little bit more. But as of right now, it's just that they were denied the 911 call.
That's crazy. That doesn't look suspicious at all.
This is about time before they like figure it out and catch them.
So
in something.
Here we have Chad Daybell, the leader of literally a doomsday cult, who has their entire thing is being prophesied. Like I prophesized about this, that someone would die. And then he has a lot of people in his life, like his ex-wife who turned up dead. Then you have Lori Vallow, who to me is kind of the central figure of this entire thing. Husband number three died suspiciously. Husband number four died suspiciously. You know, now her children are missing. Her niece's ex-husband attempted murder. Like, it's just so much crazy shit that's happened in this. So my question for you guys is, it sounds to me like Lori has been, I mean, I guess like husband number three, Joseph, you know, the one who died supposedly of a heart attack and then was promptly cremated. I guess it's possible that that was a coincidence, but like this weird shit really started happening after she met Chad Daybell.
Mm-hmm. Usually money motivates these things too. These kind of like widower killings. So it'd be really interesting to see like the monetary gain behind it.
It's truly, truly, truly bizarre. Multiple people have come forward, though, and said that Lori was acting crazy and that she got really, really into his books and, you know, got on the podcast and stuff. So is this a case of a woman who just got, you know, kind of like brainwashed? Is she literally a Black Widow / sociopath? Now, it is known, too, that so Chad Daybell, right, is a self-published author. So his books are actually sold nationwide in Mormon bookstores. The LDS Church said Chad is known for his other novels such as Chasing Paradise and the Emma Trilogy, as well as nonfiction books for youth, including The Aaronic Priesthood and The Youth of Zion.
Is Lori going to be the one writing these books with him? Oh my gosh, some of these books are insane too. They're selling, well, I mean priced insane, sorry. No, they're all absolutely insane, but The Celestial City right now, the paper book, if I could talk paperback, it's not from Amazon. I mean, it's on Amazon, but sold by someone else. Someone has it priced at $860.48. So, I mean, if you guys want to read some crazy shit from a psychopath.
So he probably, I would assume, if his books are still being sold in Mormon bookstores, that's where his money came from to be able to move things around.
Some of it.
Yeah. I don't understand it. I can get it that if there's like no information, right? Like, you know, before they served Lori and Chad as far as producing the children, like I can totally get that they had no like information, right? Like no evidence. But now they have ample evidence to prove that something's not right, that something happened to the children and she missed her deadline and still nothing yet.
They're triangulating on them. They'll find out.
I think that they just want, you know, a lot of times, and I did read an article with another attorney about this, they want concrete, irrefutable proof. So they don't, you know, get her, you know, arrest her, bring her in, have nothing to keep her on.
And lose evidence
and then lose her. Because it is very clear that these people will move around.
Oh yeah.
So
and every time they move, they lose evidence too.
Yep.
Where do you think they are, though? Like, where and when?
I think they're dead.
I think they likely witnessed something. I think that they witnessed Charles's murder, and I think that Lori decided to kill her children and take off and start a new life with Chad.
I think the plan was to start a new life anyway, yeah, without her children.
I don't know. I don't know who killed them or when they were killed, but Charles actually said in his divorce, the initial filings for like when he said he wanted to divorce Lori, that Lori had made multiple statements about how she did not want children and how she did not want to have anything to do with the children. So I think that that pretty much like makes it obvious there as far as like what happened to them.
Right. Well, he would have taken the kids too. I mean, had he not been murdered.
Right. I think he would have. You know, I mean, he came to be close to the children. That's why he was, you know, trying to move from Texas to. So maybe Tylee was first. I don't know. It's all speculation. But the one thing is for certain that this is definitely probably going to come to a conclusion at some point. I don't foresee this being an unsolved case.
No, I think every morning now, if you just Google it and go to news, there's an update of some kind.
Almost every day. So I think that, you know, we're going to get a conclusion every day. You know, new info is leaking out. So I think we're quickly approaching the conclusion of this.
Right. And we'll share, too, what we see and some of the sites that we talked about and timelines and all that fun stuff. But we want to hear, too. I mean, I like hearing what other people think, and I've been reading a ton, but it's all over the place. So I want to hear other people's thoughts, too, because some people swear that they are being hidden by the cult somewhere, like that they don't want to be there, but the cult has them and they're in hiding.
Which is also a possibility, too. You never know. But stay up to date. Feel free to go to our website, www.wesawthedouble.com. We'll be posting, you know, daily updates, and reach out to us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and tell us what you think happened. Don't forget to download our Valentine's Day Massacre episode, where we discuss crazy true crime cases that happened on Valentine's Day, and also review Gretel and Hansel and talk about Underwater. Until next week. Thank you.